chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make heaven in the middle of it. Grass make heaven in the middle. We are grass make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with some very interesting pronouncements, but we're going to start off with Greg Reese, and he has quite an insight. And then we're going to go to and reveal some of the witnesses, the whistleblowers that are going to be coming up next week and so forth. And then we're going to move into Dr. Rima LeBeau and Alex, and also this trance movement. We're going to delve into that also. But first, we're going to begin with this pronouncement, this really insightful pronouncement by Greg Reese.
Many good-hearted people have strong emotions about the environment, and their emotions are so strong that they have been manipulated by a corrupt government to castrate themselves and castrate their own children to save the earth from climate change. This should teach us something about our emotions. They can blind us from logic and reason, and we all have them. This report is not a critique of the film The Sound of Freedom. I saw this film, and I appreciate that it is bringing awareness to a subject that I personally have very strong emotions about. This report is about a clear red flag that people should be aware of, so that we don't allow our emotions to blind us from logic and reason. According to MKUltra whistleblowers, the CIA acquired children for Project Monarch by cataloging child pornography sent through the U.S. mail. And the only thing that's changed since then is that the world has gone digital. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or the NCMEC, went international in 1999. The ICMEC was launched by Hillary Clinton and Tony Blair, with Richard Branson acting as a founding sponsor. It is now partnered with law enforcement in over 150 territories, including Interpol and Europol. In 2009, the Clinton Global Initiative partnered with the Polaris Project, and by 2014, they created a global modern-day slavery database of organizations in 199 countries to monitor human trafficking. Also in 2009, Amber Ready Incorporated selected the Podesta Group, the infamous pedophile art collectors of the WikiLeaks Podesta email scandal, to be their PR company, where they were responsible for promoting Amber Ready's cell phone technology, which created a database of children so that if they ever were abducted, their information was already on file. Once this child database syndicate was launched, human trafficking increased. Within 9 years, the human trafficking industry went from around $30 billion a year to $150 billion a year. Nearly all child pornography is processed and stored within this framework on foreign servers in Sweden. In 2014, President Obama assigned the task of how to manage this gathered intelligence data to John Podesta. The Clintons, the Podestas, and their friends are demonstrably involved on the criminal side of child sex trafficking. If this is news to you, I recommend my report from 2019, Are the Clintons Involved in Human Trafficking?, which is based on the well-researched article by Corey Diggs. And it is this group who manage and run Polaris, the ICMEC, and the NCMEC. And these are the same groups that Angel Studios, producers of The Sound of Freedom, are directing people to as a way to combat child trafficking. The billionaire who has been funding Tim Ballard's operation is Carlos Slim, who has also funded Hillary Clinton and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And if you believe that the Democrats are the problem, then I recommend you look into the Franklin cover-up and the Bohemian Grove. Pedophilia is how the hidden hand controls their politician puppets. Awareness of this horrific problem is good, and perhaps Angel Studios is unaware of who they are promoting. But if we think that the same NGOs whose efforts increased the child sex trade by 500% will somehow end child sex slavery, then maybe we are too emotional to think clearly. And that's a problem, because this same cabal is pushing a totalitarian surveillance state. They're already pushing the idea of microchipping your children to keep them safe. And without logic and reason, the people will demand it, and our children will be more enslaved than ever. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Coming up next is a really good interview that Hannity had with Comer, a U.S. Representative Comer, and about what's coming up next week. And I think they've got some whistleblowers, IRS whistleblowers, that are going to be very interesting to listen to. But anyway, that Sound of Freedom, go out there and look at it. It's still here in Austin at some of the local theaters. So go out there and look at that. It's very important to do, and it's an excellent movie. But here we go with Hannity and Comer.
Joining us now with more, House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer is with us. Sir, how are you?
I'm well.
Well, I would imagine it falls under the purview of the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee to look into, okay, how did the cocaine get there? What about the two previous instances of drugs in the White House? And I ask you, Congressman, what if it was anthrax? What if it was fentanyl? There have been police officers, law enforcement, that have just touched bags and contraband with fentanyl in it, ingested somehow some of that dust, and they need Narcan 5 minutes later. So yeah. How dangerous is that in a building where the president is?
It's very dangerous. It's very disturbing. One of two things has happened here. Either, number one, the Secret Service is lying to us and they're covering for someone. Or, number two, they're incompetent. Because this is supposed to be the most secure dwelling in America. And for the Secret Service to admit to the world that not only can they not figure out who dropped off a white powdery substance in one of three locations in the White House, that, remember, that story's changed three times where the cocaine was actually found, but also that there have been two other instances where illegal drugs were found on the premise in the White House. This is unacceptable. We spend a lot of money, a lot of tax dollars to make sure that we have the best Secret Service that money can buy, but yet they can't determine who brings illegal substances into the White House. I think that's very disturbing.
Congressman, I'm equally as disturbed that they gave up after 10 days of investigating and announced on day 11, we're done. We're not going to find the person responsible. That, to me, is the height of irresponsibility. I would like answers from the Secret Service why they gave up so quickly.
That's a great question. You know, they spent 11 days to try to figure out who left an illegal substance in the White House, but they've been spending over 5 years investigating the Bidens for all their money laundering, all their racketeering, all their tax evasion, and according to U.S. Attorney Weiss, they're still investigating the president and his son for bribery and for potential wrongdoing. So it makes no sense. You know, the Secret Service hadn't really received a black eye like the Department of Justice or the FBI, but unfortunately today this is another name on the list of agencies that have run amok. Again, either they're not being truthful with the House Oversight Committee or they're incompetent by not being able to determine who left this substance. It's hard for me to believe that our technology at the FBI couldn't identify some DNA on this bag of cocaine.
Well, if they had not been politicized, I might have confidence in them telling us the truth. You have made a lot of progress in your investigation into the Biden family and the foreign business dealings of the Biden family. You have a very important hearing next Wednesday. Why is that hearing going to be different? I understand that we might be hearing a lot of new information.
We've been sitting down some new bank records. Obviously, it's very encouraging to read the transcript that the Ways and Committees had with the transcribed interview with the two IRS whistleblowers, because they actually knew a lot about many of these shell companies, and I think they were on the right track until they were told to stand down. So the American people are going to get to watch live both whistleblowers, including whistleblower X, who's never revealed his identity. He will do that the day of our hearing, and everyone can see. Hopefully Fox will be covering that, Sean. And we have specific substantive questions about many of these wires, about many of these shell companies, about potential money laundering, about potential racketeering. And I believe that these two witnesses are going to be able to answer those questions. So many times, Sean, you have these congressional hearings and, you know, they're all hat, no cattle. You don't really learn anything new, and they're not substantive. This should be a very substantive, informative hearing for the American people. And this is going to be the first time the American people actually hear credible witnesses say under oath exactly what crimes have been committed by the Biden family.
Do you have standing to go before the judge? They have this plea deal, no jail time for Hunter. Do you have standing to go to this judge and request that this deal not be agreed to by the judge because of new information and new evidence has been forthcoming?
We have to go through the Department of Justice, unfortunately, for things like granting immunity.
No.
Long story short.
All right, let me ask you this. When we got these WhatsApp messages, I'm sitting here with my father. We would like to understand why the commitment has not been fulfilled. Tell the director we'd like to resolve it now before it gets out of hand, and now means tonight. And Z, if I get a call or a text from anyone involved in this other than you, Zhang, or the chairman, I will make certain that between the man sitting next to me, his father Joe, and every person he knows, and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. I'm sitting here waiting for the call with my father. Okay. Joe Biden, he's implicated his father again. He's been implicated on many times. My question to you is simple. That to me sounds like a shakedown, Mr. Chairman. That to me sounds like Joe Biden full involvement. And 1 week, less than a week after that exchange, didn't the Biden family get $5 million transferred to them from that energy company in China?
Yes. And remember, that energy company is the same energy company that was paying Gal Luft. And the Department of Justice indicted Gal Luft on being an unregistered foreign agent. Yet Hunter Biden received about 25 times more money from that same Chinese energy company, and they let him walk free. So we're, in addition to having the committee hearing with the IRS whistleblowers, where we're going to be able to ask very substantive tax questions, we're also going to be having depositions and transcribed interviews where we can ask people exactly what Joe Biden knew and when he knew it. So I think next week has the potential to be a very productive week with respect to our investigation. And I think it's going to be there will be a lot of questions that Joe Biden's going to have to answer. And I don't know how much longer the mainstream media can turn a blind eye to this, because the evidence is overwhelming that many crimes were committed, and obviously Joe Biden had to be front and center in this.
Chairman Comer, thank you as always. We appreciate your time.
Boy, that's quite exciting about next week. Some of this last testimony, especially from Director Ray, I believe Jonathan Turley had this to say about some of these recent testimonies by some of these officials, and here we go with Jonathan Turley, an attorney that's well thought of in the D.C. area.
FBI Chief Chris Wray getting grilled by House Republicans over Hunter's troubling texts.
I'm sitting here with my father. I will make certain that between the man sitting next to me and every person he knows and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. I am sitting here waiting for the call with my father. Sounds like a shakedown, doesn't it, Director?
I'm not going to get into commenting on that.
You seem deeply uncurious about it, don't you? Almost suspiciously uncurious. Are you protecting the Bidens?
Absolutely not.
Oh, that's more. I wanted to hear more of things like that
verbatim quotes to make him comment on things that happened on his watch. Jonathan Turley joins us now, Fox News contributor. Jonathan, I like that exchange. I was surprised there weren't more. What was your takeaway as you thought about his testimony?
Well, Brian, this is what we've seen in the past. It was a false appearance of contrition and substance from the director. You know, he only apologized for things that have all violations have already been found by courts and Congress, by the way, against the best efforts of the FBI. And so for things that are already established, he went ahead and said, well, we'll never do that again. But in terms of the violations that we've already laid out in terms of censorship, FISA violations with the secret court, those are already laid out in the public record, he just refused to comment. Sometimes he said that he didn't have any recollection. And it was a maddening experience. I mean, the thing is, Congress has to make a decision here. You know, they just went through an entire hearing where they were given nothing. He was far more detailed when Eric Swalwell asked him about the FBI Family Day. With that, he just held forth at length. But when he's asked about censorship, he gives answers that seem rather obviously false. You know, he said that the FBI focused on foreign disinformation. That's just not true. I mean, we have the emails. I mean, at some point, you're treating the public like chumps.
Twitter files reveals these were Americans. They were being suppressed. And the urgency of FBI agents, many of which inside Twitter were former FBI agents. So that was the maddening part of it. He was there to impress his 38,000 FBI agents. He wasn't there for us. Jim Jordan pointed out the handling of the Hunter Biden laptop and the stunning news that they knew it was real in 2019, but let all this chicanery happen right through the election. Listen.
They pre-bunked this story, and Facebook specifically asked the FBI, is the Hunter Biden story Russian misinformation? And the FBI said, no comment. This is after they had the laptop for an entire year, after they've been telling all the big tech companies, get ready for a hack and dump operation. It's coming, and it's going to involve Hunter Biden. And then it happens, and they get that fundamental question, no comment. And this is from the Foreign Influence Task Force director, the lead on that, that Foreign Influence Task Force that Christopher Wray created.
Never really answered that question.
Right. And a lot of times he would say, I'm not familiar with that allegation that's been in the media. It's like when voir dire, when you've got a prospective juror saying they've never heard of a case on every network. You know, either the prospective juror is lying or they live in a van near the river. I don't know which one you're comfortable with. But with FBI director, with Ray, he kept on saying, you know, I'm not familiar with that particular allegation. I haven't seen that particular letter. These are things that have been in the media for months. And it's the same type of evasion. He could have answered some of these questions, and he just chose not to. So the question is, what is Congress going to do about it? They have a very serious censorship scandal. We have a 155-page opinion from this court. You've got the Twitter files that you just mentioned, Brian. There's ample evidence to show that what the director said yesterday does not comport with the truth. So the question is, what is Congress going to do about it?
And real quick, what are their options?
Well, they've got to start to pull people in. They've got to start using subpoena power. They've got to start to insist on production. The Republicans are playing a harder game now, but they're going to have to ramp it up. They're going to have to be more nimble in these hearings, and they're going to have to be more aggressive in pursuing this material.
That he needed to respond specifically to more like the Matt Gaetz-type quotes, because if he punts on something that happened under his auspices, he either looks clueless or deceptive. Jonathan, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Look forward to your testimony tomorrow.
Thank you, Brian.
All right.
Some of these opinions out there are coming out pretty well, you know, pretty objective. Coming up is How the Trans Movement Conquered America. This is an extended clip. But I thought I'd play the whole thing. It's about 12 minutes long. Then we'll follow up with Dr. McCullough's recommendations on what to use to ward off some of the next virus outbreaks. And then we'll also get into Dr. Rima LeBeau and what she says about what's going on with the UN and so forth. But coming up next is how the trash movement conquered America. And I don't believe it's a final, you know, accomplishment yet, so we've got to try to resist this. But this is a pretty well extended clip, about 12 minutes long, but it's really insightful. And then I'm going to play some McCullough, Dr. McCullough. We're going to have some recommendations on what kind of supplements to have on hand. And Dr. Rima LeBeau is going to tell us all about the UN and how that they're sexualizing our young children, and it's just destroying their lives. But here we go with how the trans movement destroyed America and took over America.
The transgender movement has conquered American life. Activist teachers have converted classrooms into propaganda. Influencers are driving billions of social media impressions, and doctors are cutting up kids in the name of gender-affirming care. The story goes deeper than you might imagine, featuring rage-filled intellectuals, a trans billionaire benefactor, and large-scale medical experiments in a Detroit ghetto. This is the story of the transgender empire, how it came into being, and how it hopes to change the face of American society forever. In order to understand what's happening with the trans movement, we have to begin with a short history lesson. In the late 1980s, a group of writers, including Judith Butler, Gail Rubin, Sandy Stone, and Susan Stryker, established the disciplines of queer theory and transgender studies. They argued that gender was a social construct used to oppress racial and sexual minorities. They denounced the categories of man and woman as a false binary that upholds a system of heteronormativity, the white, male, heterosexual power structure. These writers made the case that these systems must be ruthlessly deconstructed and turned to dust. And the most visceral, dramatic way to achieve this is transgenderism. If a man can become woman, if a woman can become man, they believed, the entire structure of creation could be toppled.
A trans movement manifesto is intended as a secular sermon that unabashedly advocates embracing a disruptive and refigurative genderqueer or transgender power as a spiritual resource.
This is Susan Stryker, one of the founding theorists of the trans movement. In her best-known essay on performing transgender rage, Stryker argues that the transsexual body is a technological construction that represents a war against Western society. I am a transsexual, and therefore I am a monster, Stryker writes. And this body, Stryker says, is destined to channel its rage and revenge against the naturalized heterosexual order, against traditional family values, and against the hegemonic oppression of nature itself. There's something important to understand here. The transgender movement is inherently political, using the construction of personal identity to advance a collective political vision. Some trans activists even believe their movement represents the future of Marxism. In a collection of essays titled Transgender Marxism, Rosa Lee argues that trans people can serve as the new vanguard of the proletariat, promising to abolish heteronormativity in the same way that Orthodox Marxism promised to abolish capitalism. Lee writes, "In a different era, Marxists spoke of the construction of a new socialist man as a crucial task in the broader process of socialist construction. Today, in a time of both rising fascism and an emergent socialist movement, our challenge is transsexualizing our Marxism. We should think of the project of transition to communism in our time as including the transition to new communist selves, new ways of being and relating to one another. This is the great project of the transgender movement, to abolish the distinctions of man and woman, to transcend the limitations established by creation, to hitch the personal struggle of trans individuals to the political struggle of revolution. All of society must be reorganized to affirm their identities and, more importantly, their politics." So how did the trans movement suddenly move from the fringes to the center of public life? Because they built one of the most sophisticated ideological pipelines in American politics. It begins with a flood of cash. In recent years, some of the wealthiest people in the country have spent enormous sums of money subsidizing the trans movement. Jennifer Pritzker is one of them. Pritzker, born James Pritzker in 1950, served a career in the United States military
and inherited a sizable part of the Hyatt Hotel fortune. In 2013, Pritzker announced a male-to-female gender transition. The newspaper celebrated Pritzker as the first trans billionaire, and almost immediately, Pritzker began donating untold millions to universities, schools, hospitals, and activist organizations to promote queer theory and trans medical experiments. Meanwhile, Pritzker's cousin, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, signed legislation pushing radical gender theory in the state education curriculum and directing state Medicaid funds towards transgender surgeries. Here's Governor Pritzker speaking to an audience of trans activists.
Tonight I'm here to say that our state government is firmly on your side. We're going to make sure that all transgender Illinoisans are ensured their basic human rights and that health care services are provided to them so that they can thrive.
Here's how the scheme works in practice. Pritzker funded activists at Chicago's largest children's hospital provide local schools with training, materials, and personnel promoting child gender transitions, using the reputation of the hospital to provide their ideology with a scientific veneer. These are some of the materials. As I've uncovered through investigative reporting, the activists and teachers associated with Lurie Children's Hospital expose children not only to trans ideology, but to kink, BDSM, breast binders, and artificial penis packers. The goal, according to the Children's Hospital, is to disrupt entrenched norms in Western society and to guide vulnerable students towards transgender medicine as the cure. Meanwhile, trans activists flood social media with propaganda.
It's because of this one part of my body.
The Chicago area detransitioner, Helena Kirshner, describes her transition experience this way. When I was 15, I was introduced to transgender ideology on social media and began to call myself non-binary. Over the next few years, I would continue to go deeper and deeper down the trans identity rabbit hole. And by the time I was 18, I saw myself as a trans man. The result is a sophisticated school-to-gender clinic pipeline. Teachers, counselors, doctors, and influencers, many of whom are governed or subsidized by members of the Pritzker family, all push kids towards the science and politics of transgenderism. Highland Park, Michigan is one of the poorest and most miserable cities in America. It's nested within the city of Detroit and has been plagued by poverty, violence, crime, and death for decades. The city can't even afford to keep the streetlights on. But there is one institution in Highland Park that is overflowing with funds, the Ruth Ellis Center. The Ruth Ellis Center is Metro Detroit's central laboratory for the synthesis of transgender science and politics. The center's marketing pitch is an amalgam of all the fashionable left-wing buzzwords: trauma-informed care, restorative justice, harm reduction, racial equity, and gender-affirming care. The last one is the most significant. Each year, the Ellis Center and its partners conduct large-scale medical experiments on a population of predominantly black youth who've run the gauntlet of homeless shelters, foster care, juvenile hall, and the streets. Dr. Maureen Conley is a pediatrician at Henry Ford Health and leads the Ellis Center's medical partnerships, providing puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgical referrals to scores of Detroit kids.
Transitioning is an umbrella term to describe the process that someone goes through to bring their external self more closely into alignment with their gender identity. Typically, that's masculinizing or feminizing medications or hormone therapy. People can also choose to pursue gender-affirming surgeries, which are surgical interventions to bring their body more closely in alignment with their gender identity.
Keep in mind, these are not the white, affluent, educated, male-to-female trans individuals who are the public face of the movement. These are poor, black, traumatized youth from the furthest reaches of the Detroit ghetto. They suffer from enormously high rates of family breakdown, substance abuse, mental illness, and suicidal behavior. And they're told that gender transition, the latest promise of therapeutic liberalism, will solve all their problems. The most elite members of our society, affluent, highly educated, left-wing female doctors, are using the marvels of modern medicine to manufacture the ultimate oppression, the poor black trans woman.
I think I might have been about 8 years old when I remember having any thought of being transgender or gender nonconforming. It felt like I was an outsider to this whole world of America. On top of not being, you know, a European American, I was black.
The doctors at the Ellis Center have created the new face of the proletariat, the highest authority in the intersectional hierarchy, and they've embedded the revolution into the very biology of their patients. In 1818, the novelist Mary Shelley wrote a book titled Frankenstein, or The Modern Prometheus. The premise of the book is that modern science, stripped from the constraints of ethics and nature, will end up creating monsters. The trans-affirming doctors are the postmodern iteration of Dr. Victor Frankenstein. They promised salvation through transition, but end up creating disaster.
I think what we're becoming very known for at OHSU is genital surgery. And a prime example of that is a procedure called phalloplasty, which is the creation of a penis.
Dr. Blair Peters is a plastic surgeon who uses he-they pronouns and performs transgenital surgeries at the publicly funded Oregon Health and Science University. Peters specializes in phalloplasty, the creation of an artificial penis, and vaginoplasty, the creation of an artificial vagina.
And we now have a robotic vaginoplasty program. We have the highest volume on the West Coast. And this has been a kind of game changer for patient care, as we're now able to provide two cases a day in a single.
But the most revealing surgery performed by Dr. Peters and his colleagues is known as nullification. In this procedure, doctors perform a castration or a vaginectomy on the patient, then create a smooth, continuous skin covering from the abdomen to the groin, reducing the genitalia to nothing. This barbaric procedure is the perfect symbol for the ideology itself. Nullification is the pursuit of the Latin nullum, meaning nothing. And that is exactly where trans ideology ends. A profound nihilism that denies human nature and enables barbarism in the name of progress. Although this movement enjoys a certain measure of elite support, there is no doubt it will end in tragedy. Jennifer Pritzker, Maureen Connolly, and Blair Peters occupy the heights of power and prestige, but like Dr. Victor Frankenstein, they will learn a hard lesson. No matter how advanced their castration machines become, the trans activists and doctors cannot abolish the reality of man and woman. They cannot transcend the limitations of creation, and to the extent that they try, they will elicit the same heartbreak and alienation captured in the final scene of Mary Shelley's novel. The hulking monster, shunned by society and betrayed by his father, filled with suicidal despair, drifting off into the ice floes, a symbol of Promethean hubris meeting its final consequence.
We just can't roll over and say the trans movement is all there and we can't do anything about it. We've got to work with our churches and so forth, and we've got to get back to the natural law. The natural law has men and women. This thing is trying to destroy our relationship to the natural law. But here's what Dr. Peter McCullough recommends. He says there is going to be another epidemic, and he recommends the following things. And I'm going to put up some of these embedded clips and videos on my site. So come into thesecrettruth.com, and you'll be able to see the complete interview on some of these just after listening. And we'll have a complete one with Dr. McCullough up on the site where you can see the whole interview he had with Alex. But here's what Peter McCullough, the recommendations and warnings he gives us about what to have on hand.
There's going to be another pandemic, and it's going to be worse than COVID-19. And guess what all these people have in common? They have a vaccine as an answer. Remember, Gates Foundation and WEF, they founded CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation. And CEPI's business plan says there will be a series of infectious disease pandemics, and there'll only be one response, mass vaccination. So these guys are all lathered up for some more misery so they can actually make a mint off of vaccines. You know, Gates Foundation is an NGO. They were internally investing in BioNTech and all these other entities. They made massive amounts of money on our misery with the pandemic. What everybody needs to do is make sure they're signed up with the wellness company and have some base support. Everybody ought to have the base detox protocol ready because they've already had COVID. So that's the wellness company's spike support plus bromelain plus curcumin. They ought to have the McCullough protocol basics, aspirin, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D. Now we use curcumin instead of quercetin. And then famotidine, most of these are in the InfoWars store. Everybody out of a shoebox of these. And Alex, for sure, having viricidal nasal sprays and washes. I want everyone to have a good
iodine. That's what I want to talk to you about is promoting that, because I've been approached by the doctors saying that's the key. And do you guys have that now at the onlinehealthnow.com? Do you guys have the...
Yeah. Well, we have an array of products, but let me just review them. I want people to understand that there's some terrific commercial products out there. One's called Cofix RX. That's a spray that has pretty high concentration of povidone iodine plus xylitol plus vitamin D and carnagenin. That's a terrific.
Okay, say that product again to go to onlinehealthnow.com. What's the name of that product?
It's called Cofix RX. Now, it's not on the wellness company, but you can find it separately. The other really critical nasal sprays, another one's called Clear with xylitol and grapefruit seed extract, colloidal silver. Some of these may be featured in your store. You can make your homemade sprays with povidone iodine. And remember, gargles. Alex, gargles are super important. In the first hour of a sore throat, I want everybody gargling using Scope or Listerine. Put a few drops of iodine in it and kill it.
And what you're saying is key. Remember the UN protocol put out by Fauci and the NIH, because we know they ran it. When you get to the hospital with a sore throat, having trouble breathing, just go home and wait till you're half dead, then come back, then we'll kill you with a ventilator. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, Alex, in my Substack, believe it or not, there was a study done in Asia. Even if you used the sprays and the gargles in the hospital, they even worked in the hospital. Do you know, in the U.S., the nurses didn't give the patients any sprays or gargles. They got railroaded on the ventilator. I want everybody to have a viricidal nasal spray, have Scope or Listerine, have an iodine bottle, and be ready. The first hour of getting sick, get on it. When you're sick, every 4 hours, doing the nasal sprays and gargles. You can do it twice a day for prevention. I don't travel without having a high-quality spray. And let me tell you, it makes a world of difference. It works against flu, the common cold, COVID, and probably the next thing coming our way.
There's a little end note here. Fossey, one of his emails was caught recently, and there's just a two-minute clip that we picked up today. It's sort of breaking news this morning about an email that implicates him in covering up the Wuhan evidence of the Wuhan virus outbreak or the escape from the Wuhan. But he'll go just with a short clip, and then we'll end up with Dr. LeBeau.
Newly unredacted emails from Dr. Anthony Fauci suggest that he was not sold on the natural COVID origin theory, despite what he was telling the public.
Former State Department investigator claiming Fauci was part of a cover-up.
Griff Jenkins joins us live with more Live in the Flesh. We always get big smiles on our face when we see Griff here. How are you doing, brother?
That's because I drink Coors Light when the sun comes up. But exactly, let me digress. Good morning, guys. Paging Dr. Fauci, the House Select Committee on COVID has some questions for you. Chief among them, did COVID come from a lab leak? Because it appears in this latest revelation, Fauci acknowledges in private that gain-of-function research was underway in that lab in Wuhan, China. That's according to this unredacted email from February of 2020. And credit here goes to Martha McCallum's producers on the story who dug into this. Now take a look at these two images of the same email. One totally redacted, produced from a previous FOIA request. The other from the committee revealing what Fauci wrote to his fellow scientists, saying, quote, "That would be most unusual to have evolved naturally in the bats, and there was a suspicion that this mutation was intentionally inserted." Now, one source says this information was not classified, but instead hidden because it made Fauci look bad since he knew of the gain of function. And Dr. Sapphire, you can appreciate this. The source also says Fauci, who oversaw the biodefense program at NIH, should have been aware that the Wuhan lab had been determined by the State Department to have, quote, "an adequate safety control." Now, Dr. David Asher, who is part of the State Department's investigation into COVID's origins, says this was a cover-up. Watch.
Now they're basically saying that, you know, they had that thesis all the way up to just before the publication, basically, of their paper. and it was essentially rejected by Fauci and by Nature Medicine itself, which is also complicit. The cover-up is so much more extensive, and I can only imagine what's going to come out in the coming weeks as more of Fauci's internal communications are uncovered.
And I think he's right. More may be coming, guys. The committee chaired by Dr. Brad Winstrup says this is far from over.
Well, you know, Fauci's in trouble. He's out of the government now. But I don't know. He's terrible. It cost people. His advice was bad advice, and it cost us dearly. But coming up next is Dr. Rima Lebeau with Alex, and they really get into this UN thing. Also, Alex and Lebeau did an emergency broadcast this afternoon from his Austin studios, and I'm going to put that up and make that either embedded or give you a click off where you can get in there. It's several hours long, and she goes through a lot of different documents, so it goes into much more detail than this short interview that I'm going to put up here. But we're just going to go to the end. When you hear the music, you know we're at the end of the program of the first hour. But thank you for listening, and come into thesecrettruth.com to view those other full interviews. Thank you for listening. God bless each and every one of you.
Let's talk about what happens when you hypersexualize children, when you rape children, when you intrude on their psychosexual development. What happens is that you truncate, you cut off, you freeze their emotional development. If you rape and traumatize every single child and then continually re-traumatize them, because remember, the entire educational curriculum worldwide is being focused through a lens of sexuality. Math is to be taught through sexuality.
Yeah, that's their entire cult, is sexually manipulating a child, ruining their development, steering control of their development. You're talking about trauma-based mind control.
I'm talking about trauma-based mind control. One of the things that they've defined, as you said, is that sexuality, the sex life of every child, is a human right. Let me point out, as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, as a mother, as a human being, as a rational person, the children don't have a sex life. Children have an experiential life in which they experience feelings from every part of their body, correctly and appropriately. They experience genital feelings and physical feelings of other sorts, and they're exploring how all of that feels, and that's great. But children do not have a sex life. However, on March 8th of this year, this same dastardly, despicable body known as the United Nations said, hey, jurists, hey, criminal prosecutors, hey, legislators all over the world, let's reform and reformat our entire legal structure and decriminalize sex with anybody as long as that anybody says okay. We need to talk about hate. And that is a large part of the answer to the question that you just asked. We are being manipulated and maneuvered to hate one another and to have no common agenda with one another, while the globalists put out something that they call our common agenda, which is to destroy all of us and to enslave us from the genetic level outward. So one of the best techniques that dictators have always used is to have an external enemy. And if you can make the external enemy external to your tiny little group, then everybody is your enemy.
We're going to the real danger zone for the next hour, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Rima Lebeau of PreventGenocide2030.org. Dr. Rima Lebeau, medical doctor, PreventGenocide2030.org, PreventGenocide2030.org, joins us for the rest of the next hour. And wow, where to begin? She's got a bunch of UN documents that are public with this UN World Treaty, the announcements of the central bank digital currencies, the announcement of the medical IDs, the vaccine passports. It's all coming. It's all here. So, doctor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Alex. And this is such an important conversation. I'm really glad we're talking today.
Well, let's plunge right into it, because you sent us a lot of documents to go over.
I did. Let's start with the fact that the UN and the WHO, which is a subsidiary servant organization like UNESCO and UNICEF and Food and Agriculture Organization, are designed to control the entire world, to be a world dictatorship, the likes of which we have never seen. And up until now, their very pretty contour, their makeup, their facade has been all benign and lovely. But those pretenses are falling away. On the 75th anniversary of the United Nations, the member states asked, and there are quotes around all of that, the member states asked the Secretary General Gutierrez, who is a very scary dude, but they asked Gutierrez to come up with a new document to move the UN further than its already quite terrifying charter takes it. Now, if you read the UN charter, which I did in high school as part of my civics class, and frankly, I was bored out of my mind by it. But if you read it now, you'll see that it takes over everything. That's how it's written. And they said, but that's not enough. They said, what if there are more shocks? There are global shocks. And I sent you a document called Annotated Global Shocks Plan for September 2024.
That's right. We'll put all that on screen. So they're talking about, and previously, we're going to use Disease X, they said 4 years ago, to bring the UN into control. And that was COVID. Now they're saying we need more global shocks. And so we'll put those documents on screen.
And this document says that this shows that the global shock concept, which is anything, it can be climate change, it can be a slowdown in the supply chain, it can be a black swan event, something we don't know yet, it can be another pandemic, it can be nothing at all, it can be the threat of having a global shock.
It can be a war.
That's perfectly. It could be a war, like, for instance, by the way, speaking of war, the United Nations was formed allegedly to prevent wars. And I would like to point out that I can't think of a single conflict that the United Nations successfully either prevented or brought to a conclusion sooner. They're certainly not doing much of a good job in the Ukraine.
Although their specialty is cheerleading wars.
They cheerlead wars because, of course, the people who control the United Nations and the other globalist hegemony organizations and structures make money from wars, and they also depopulate and control from wars. So wars are very useful for them. So anyway, once we have all these global shocks that could happen to us, there's only, from their point of view, one possible way to deal with the possibility of global shocks, and that is to take over the entire world. And that's just what they've planned to do. So on the 75th anniversary of the globalist organization, which was written and designed to take over the world eventually, the member states said, tell us how we can take over the world, Director General Gutierrez. And Director General Gutierrez was only too happy to do so. He produced a document called Who We Are. And the document called Who We Are states that we are a group of people who are going to control everything because we say we can. And given global shocks, we can control communication, we can control academia, we can control supply lines, we can control manufacturing, we can control food, we can control everything because, as they say, that's who we are. And the special report of the Secretary General says we have a common agenda. And that common agenda, and these are public documents that are available to anyone, the public document is filled with hyperbole and filled with misstatements which have absolutely no documentation and no reality. Statements like, We are at an inflection point in history in our biggest shared test since the Second World War. Humanity faces a stark and urgent choice, a breakdown or a breakthrough. What are they talking about? This is puffery of the most political sort.
And then meanwhile, I want to play a short clip to back you up. They say, oh, COVID came from global warming. No, it was in a lab. Oh, there's migrants flooding us because of COVID and global warming. No, you locked them down and then organized them to come here. So they're saying global warming's going to cause a civilizational collapse, and it's all our fault, but they're the ones administratively, through the big banks, through the Fortune 500, through the UN, literally collapsing civilization. And then John Kerry comes out a few days ago in Europe and says, don't worry, there'll be more resources under this. But in their own reports, they say they're going to cut the resources off. Here he is.
And we're seeing already in every aspect of life, it is now being affected by the climate crisis. But again, I say, this is not something where everybody has to go, oh my God, I don't want to do this because it's scary as hell and because we're not going to, you know, live the way we did. No, we will have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm.
So, under your research, I mean, I have their official UN report saying we're going to live in 200 square foot coffin apartments and eat bugs.
Exactly. That is exactly where they want us to go. And they have decided that the way to do this is to have a plan. And the plan is to go from the common agenda, which the Secretary General of the United Nations says we have. And in fact, we do not. Their agenda is not my agenda in any way. To go from that to a roadmap for a pact for the future. They have put out something. They have beautiful graphics, by the way. They really have excellent public relations people. So they have something called a road to the summit of the future. And they have decided that there will be a summit of the future held in September 2024. And at that time, a pact for the future will be signed, which will be administered by and implemented by former heads of government. That's WEF guys, right? Like Jacinda Ardern, for example, like every one of our former presidents, like Justin Trudeau, if he is a former prime minister at that point. They've got a whole roster of people that they've put capes and crowns on to say that they're something special when really they're despicable sock puppets who are perfectly happy to sell us all out for their own well-being. So this pact for the future is going to bring us global solidarity and sustainability. Anytime you hear words like that, you know that they're planning something destructive. So the road to the summit for the future, and by the way, their global shocks pact and summit plans will be implemented in September 2024, just before the U.S. election. Huh, I wonder how that happened. So they've got this roadmap, and they've got a common agenda. And one of the things that they've done, Alex, and this is really important, and I know you've talked about it a lot, is that they have weaponized language. What does that mean? That means that they take words like human rights, and they redefine that so that it means our ability to destroy becomes.
Yeah, a human right is to take your 7-year old and cut their genitals off. A human right is to censor you. Yeah.
Exactly. And that is precisely the point. Now, one of the things that they've defined, as you said, is that sexuality, the sex life of every child, is a human right. Let me point out, as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, as a mother, as a human being, as a rational person, that children don't have a sex life. Children have an experiential life in which they experience feelings from every part of their body, correctly and appropriately. They experience genital feelings and physical feelings of other sorts, and they're exploring how all of that feels, and that's great. But children do not have a sex life. However, on March 8th of this year, this same dastardly, despicable body known as the United Nations said, hey, jurists, hey, criminal prosecutors, hey, legislators all over the world, let's reformat, let's reform and reformat our entire legal structure and decriminalize sex with anybody as long as that anybody says okay. And as I've said on your program and as other people have commented, that means that if somebody says, hey, little boy, hey, little girl, touch me here and I'll give you a piece of candy, and the kid who's 2 years old, 3 years old says, okay, that means that child has consented and there's no disparity in power or capability.
Sure, sure. So they're getting rid of saying that children aren't of age and don't have consent to buy a rocket launcher or join the military or skydive or, you know, do any of this. I mean, this is an absolute targeting of children. And since we've been talking about this, Biden took off child trafficking as an issue off the U.S. government websites.
Exactly.
They stopped DNA testing of children that they're finding at the border so they can disappear them into wherever knows next. California will not even make it a felony to be caught sex trafficking a child the second time. They're legalizing sex with 12-year-olds in California. They did legalize giving somebody HIV or hepatitis. I mean, they're really making their move. How many of these pedophiles are there? Like, how big is this submerged iceberg? Because when you have the corporate media attacking movies like Sound of Freedom and just saying it's not true, there's no sex trafficking, while they sexualize children everywhere, all over the news and TV.
While they remove sex trafficking from activities of interest from our justice system.
Yes, I mean, so this is a pedophile revolution. What is it about at its base? Is there a group behind that, or is it just a pedophile army?
Let's talk about what happens when you hypersexualize children, when you rape children, when you intrude on their psychosexual development. What happens is that you truncate, you cut off, you freeze their emotional development. If you rape and traumatize every single child and then continually re-traumatize them, because remember, the entire educational curriculum worldwide is being focused through a lens of sexuality. Math is to be taught through sexuality.
Yeah, that's their entire cult is sexually manipulating a child, ruining their development, steering control of their development. You're talking about trauma-based mind control.
I'm talking about trauma-based mind control, making people obedient, making people incapable of further thought. When people have post-traumatic stress disorder because they've been traumatized, and that's what we're talking about, intentional bile traumatization, what happens is that they cannot see the future. They cannot think past the immediate fear and trauma and survival. So what you're doing is freezing people in a state of early childhood emotional and psychological development, and you can give them facts and they can do math and be physicists or technicians or doctors or whatever, but emotionally you have made them completely tractable and further controllable. So this is all about mind control. Now, in Ireland, they're going to kill 200,000 cows, and the population is supposed to say, okay, kill 10% of our herd, our cattle herd. Go ahead, do that. And in the Netherlands, close down 10,000 farms. People are supposed to tractably say, okay, whatever it is that you want to do, because I can't think further than my immediate survival and pleasure. And that's the brave new world, trauma-based mind control that all of this UN stuff and all of this WHO stuff rests upon.